robbery happened. But anyway, it's a long story, and I want to make it short enough here that we can get some questions in. But this guy began harassing the valley of Zapoticum. He lived up in the mountains with another robber band and would come down, and he started really making it hard for the Christians. And he discovered really quickly that the Christians were non-resistant. And man, that was just, this is easy money, man. I can go get these guys. They used to say here in Waflala about Tim Schrock and me, they're at the clinic in Kusuli. Oh boy, stealing from the Mennonites is easy. All you need to do is bear with some preaching. They preach at you a while, but they don't resist. They just give you whatever they have. They give you coffee and they give you food and make coffee. And it became a slogan in these hills, how easy it is to rob the Christians. Now that they're totally mistaken. It's actually the opposite. They should never have started stealing from the Christians, because that's the apple of God's eye. So they thought it was easy. Oh, that's peanuts. And oh, the joke they had, because they'd steal, they'd sometimes come one time they robbed us with a green banana, and it looked like a pistol in the dark. And man, he made hay. Another time, we'll show you this afternoon some of the things that they use. So, oh, that's easy. No, it isn't. So he's harassing the Zapoticum Valley, and he comes around, especially focuses on one of the brethren that had a big farm and was rich, and his sons were Christians, and they had money and they knew it. So this Haimon was his name. He started coming and pressuring them for big money. Well, what happened is that Marcelo, the rich farmer, just moved to Waslala and got out of there because he knew his life was in danger. Meanwhile, this guy came and threatened and kept zeroing in. And he wants big money and he wants Marcelo to come personally. So he finally came one day and told the family, he said, I'm coming on Tuesday and I'm coming at between 7 o'clock in the morning and 4 o'clock to 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Be ready. Marcelo's got to be here, and I need 250,000 cordobas, which is a lot of money. Anyway, it's a long story, but anyway, when that date came up, these brethren were really shook up. Marcelo, of course, is in town, and so I offered to go along. My son and was there as pastor, and then these boys, Marcelo's sons, and then we got some other couple other brethren involved. I think it ended up we were six of us waiting for the robbers. And even from the day before, we were tense because we thought they might come the night before. We prepared. And the thing that was such a blessing is to see these national men that never had been taught non-resistance to prepare. And we knelt in a circle to pray the evening before this appointment. And they're praying and they're begging God to send them. That really shocked me. They're saying, Lord, please send them, because we had a table full of gifts. Each one of us personally had prepared a gift bag. And Marcelo was sending like about a quarter of the money in a gift bag. And we were to tell the robber, this is a gift from Marcelo. It's not stolen. This is a gift, a money gift. Because we were concerned that he might get very violent if we didn't have something. So that was the plan. I had a little something here that I was crazy enough to put into my gift bag. My son and I prepared a bag with much love. And I mean, honestly, it was just in our hearts. We had flashlights and deodorants and some of them in the gift bags had new Bibles. And I put in this little note. People thought I was crazy. Jesus loves you, it says up here, and I do too. But I don't know why I think that man could never forget that. Anyway, we had all this ready, and they didn't come, and they wouldn't come, and they wouldn't come, and finally in the evening, here they showed up. And I have some pictures here. What happened was that we had one of the sisters in the church was in the top story of Jacinto's house with a camera and a zoom lens, and she took a whole bunch of pictures, and we didn't realize what's happening, but she actually got photos of this of this whole succession of this robbery. And the guy came and herded us into a porch and had us in there where we had the gifts, the table of gifts ready for him. And well, he, of course, immediately, "Where's Marcelo and where's my money?" And then we explained why Marcelo couldn't come and why we couldn't give big money like that, because it would ruin the mission, because everybody would start coming and doing what he's doing. And then we'd offer him those gifts. And we'd tell him, "We have all these gifts prepared for you. Each one of us has this bag of special things for you." But he was really hard. He had just 2 months before, he had shot one of the neighbors. They got into a fight because he was robbing him, and the guy saw he's alone and grabbed his shotgun. So they tackled, and he actually was able to pull the farmer's pistol out of his belt and shot him. And as the farmer walked away, he would laugh, telling his friends he bellowed like a bull. And remember that, because that's going to come up in the story here in a minute. So now this man, we're talking about a man that to kill somebody was peanuts. So here he is, and by the way, he had the farmer's pistol in his belt. We recognized it. The boys recognized it. But anyway, he just really got upset. Said he had a mask on and a cap down, and we could just see his eyes. But he's standing there with the pistol, with his hand on the pistol, and he's saying, "I want money. I don't want gifts. Where's Marcelo?" And there was about 15 minutes when the group of us really, really expected some bloodshed. It was extremely tense, because we're talking about a man whose heart is so hard. Years. He's probably almost 30 now, 27 to 30. Or maybe 25. But he is hardened and he's bitter. Nobody loves him. You hear that? Nobody loves him. God has no way to get a hold of him. He lives in the jungle, surrounded with wicked men. They do marijuana every day. They live a life of the wicked. How's God going to get a hold of him? He doesn't read a Bible. He doesn't have contact with Christians. And his heart is so hard, the Spirit can't get a hold of him anymore. So God sends him into that room where we are, and we're praying under our breath. We're saying, "Lord, soften his heart, make these gifts work." And we tell him about the gifts. And Eddie, my son-in-law, that is one of these young fellows, brought the bag, the gift bag, and showed him, "Look, Marcelo's sending you 50,000 cordobas. It's a gift. You're not going to steal it. We're going to give it to you." And he'd say, "No, my jefe, my boss would never allow that. He'll kill me. My boss will kill me." We found out later that his boss was Satan himself. The story has come out now about the wickedness of this man, and the tension and the pressure there was. But you know what? We kept on, and we saw that he didn't shoot. He didn't. So we started witnessing to him. And to hear those national boys begging, "Come on, give your heart to the Lord, man. Throw your gun down. Come up here in front. Kneel down and pray. We'll pray for you. Change your life." He said, "I can't. They'll kill me." And then we said, "Okay." I offered to snatch him out of there. I said, "If you want to give your heart to the Lord, you throw your gun down and you come in here and you kneel down and we pray for you and you give your heart to the Lord," I said, "I will snatch you out of here and take you to Waslala and make sure you're okay." And he just had never left his hand on the pistol. He said, "I can't. My boss will kill me. I have to have money." Then all of a sudden, Marcelo's brother was there. He's one of the Christians in the church there. And he says, "You know what? If you give your heart to the Lord..." Oh, he was saying that his boss needs money to buy a farm. He said, "I'll give you half of my farm." He had 40 manzanas. He said, "I'll give you 20 manzanas. I'll give you half of my land. I will give you the deed. I'll give you the title. And I'll give you enough tin to build you a house, a roof for your house." And another one of the boys piped up and said, "I'll give you a cow with a calf so you can start. We'll help you." We begged with him. And here are these gifts that we've made just for you. And love just softened him down, softened him down. And all of a sudden we saw that we didn't know what's going to happen, but it's not going to be bloodshed. So we just turned up the burner. And then Marcelo's brother, now these pictures were taken from 200 yards away with a telescopic lens, so you can't see very well. But I was hoping maybe you could see Marcelo's brother in the doorway of this porch. And right behind the edge of the door is where this robber was. And I was hoping maybe you could see this man lifts up his hands and he prays the heavens down for him. He said, I didn't bring you a gift, he said, but I have something better. May I pray for you? And the robber nodded. Okay, Brian, how are we there? Can you see the guy in the doorway raising his hands?
Yes, we can see that, brother.
And at this point, you know, we're fighting with a life and death matter. We have no idea that this rendezvous from 200 yards away from a window is snapping pictures. He prayed a prayer that I know smote that man's heart. And we were all shedding tears, you know. And I can't help but think, but he was too. After the prayer, we still didn't know what's going to happen. He went back to where the group was, where the table was. And everything is quiet. We didn't know what's going to happen. He didn't say anything. I didn't say anything. And all of a sudden, the Lord told me, not in an audible voice, I just clearly felt, go give that man a hug. Now, you don't do that in each that one. But God just, go give that man a hug. And I walked up to him. And I looked at him, you know, a little slip between his cap and the mask, and I said, may I give you a hug? And to this day, it's hard to believe, but he nodded. And I walked over and I said, these hands are Jesus' hands today. Jesus is going to give you a hug. And I walked over and I laid my head, I hugged him and put my head on his chest, and I bawled because the tension of the day. And then back in the back, it just turned loose. There were guys howling. They were crying so hard. All the tension. And you know, we were afraid a guy would shoot somebody. So here we are. All of a sudden, this man is allowing me to give him a hug. Love had won. Love won. And his heart was broken. And there's no way that man could have kept from crying, although we couldn't really see. But he was totally moved. He didn't budge. My native brethren told me later, said, Paul, we thought you're crazy. That guy has his pistol right here. All he'd have to do is pull it out and just, he could shoot you. I didn't even think of it. But what I wanted to tell you, brethren, the love I felt was real. This is not just drama, making up something so I can tell you guys and become famous. Absolutely not. This is totally real. I loved him in my heart. I hugged him. And that's the next picture. It's going to be hard for you to see it, but she got a picture of me hugging him. Is there any way, Bryant, that you could kind of half see that? Can I turn it differently?
I think that's the best that you can do there. That's great. Thank you, Pablo.
After I was done, I backed off, went back to the group, all the gifts. Oh, then Jacinto. No, it was actually before that. Jacinto had went up and he had asked if we have a Bible, which was really interesting. Anyway, Jacinto ended up packing all the gifts in a backpack and putting it by his feet. Then we knew that he had accepted it. He had accepted the gifts that were at his feet when I hugged him. After the hug, I backed up and went back, and we were all just, you know, still just tears streaming down our face. He looked around and he said, well, I guess I'll go. It's almost like he hated to leave. He was on holy ground. I'm sure he knew it. He said, well, I guess I'll go. And then the first time in the evening, in the evening, he took his hand off of his gun, his right hand, and he went around and shook hands with each one of us. And he went out the door, friend. Never came back to bother the Christians again. when he went out, we all invoked the blessing on him. God bless you. God bless you. Now, brethren, can you just think of how God was feeling? Do you see the purpose? This man is so wicked, and he's going to die. We didn't know that. We're not going to kill him. But his days were measured. God knew when the day was coming. 3 months later, robbing some guys on a road, a 16-year-old boy, after he shot him in the leg, fell off his horse, and from under the horse, he shot him 3 times and killed him. And they said he went down bawling like a bull. So God knows his days are numbered. He knows this is it. And he says, I'll give him one more chance. Now, God knew that he's going to spurn it. God knew that he is not going to be courageous enough to take that opportunity and get on his knees. But I tell you, brethren, God did all he could. God gave him the most beautiful opportunity that a robber can have to change his ways and to allow love to come into his heart. He spurned it. He kept right on robbing. And he died. But now, back to Luke.